A reading from the Gospel of Luke. The birth of Jesus. In those days, a decree went out from the Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn. In that region, there were shepherds living in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. Then an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid, for see, I am bringing you good news of great joy for all the people. To you is born this day in the city of David a Saviour who is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign for you. You will find a child wrapped in bands of cloth and lying in a manger." And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth peace among those whom he favours."
One of the most amazing experiences you can have is to be present when a child is born. And I very well remember the birth of my three sons, two here at the Royal Women's and our eldest, Matthew, in Santa Monica Hospital. And it's a remarkable experience, and it's amazing the things that stick in your memory from those hours. Odd things sometimes. Like, I remember that when Matthew was born, there was a fire in the Mercedes-Benz factory just below the hospital. That's what was happening at the time. And little details. And I've often thought about Mary remembering that night when she gave birth and these shepherds turned up with an amazing story, remembering her own encounters too with her cousin and with the angel, and pondering those very precious memories that she had. One of the amazing experiences of holding a newborn baby for the first time. I remember, I think I was like the first person to really hold Matthew. Couldn't do it now. He's 6 foot, whatever. But just walking around with him, and you look in this little face and you wonder, what does the future hold for this person? It's unknown. You know, you can't even imagine what extraordinary blessing or perhaps pain or perhaps both might come from this person in the future. It's a mysterious thing to think about, what a gift a child is, and yet full of such hope, expectation, promise, possibilities. It's really a remarkable point in a person's life when you look at a little child like that and think about the future and realize that you won't be part of all of it. You'll be part of some of it, but you won't see it all happen. Well, Jesus was a remarkable baby. And he was remarkable not only because of the context of surrounding his birth, the angel and the shepherds and the angels in the fields and the extraordinary things that were happening at that time. He's remarkable because of who he was, the Son of God. And that he had extraordinary trajectory in his life, extraordinary influence. I've often thought about that, but it's actually taken years for me to fully grasp how extraordinary Jesus is. And one of the reasons, I think, is I just grew up with Jesus in my head. I grew up going to church and listening to the gospel read every Sunday at church. And if you're following a traditional Anglican pattern, you hear the whole gospel's read every 3 years on Sunday morning. So, you know, by the time I was 10, I might not have understood it all, but I'd heard the gospels, the stories of Jesus read 3 times at least just every Sunday. And so you just grew up with Jesus. And it's really taken me years to fully understand how remarkable Jesus is. Sometimes you get a glimpse of it when someone tells you a story of how Jesus has changed their life. This little baby has had such an incredible legacy. I remember one of my Iranian friends, he was telling me that in Iran he was in a really bad way. He has terrible scratch marks on his arm from self-harming. Obviously he really cut himself badly. And in Iran he was a drug addict. And he said he was so wasted and in such bad condition that he would just kind of slink around the streets and try and catch just a bit of the ray of sun. But he sometimes felt like he was transparent. You know, there wasn't much of him at all. When he came out to Australia, he became a Christian in the processing camp on Christmas Island. He decided to follow Jesus. I said, well, you know, what made you decide to follow Jesus? He said, I read a verse of the Bible. And I thought, oh, that's really good. I want to know that verse, you know. Maybe I can tell other people that verse. I said, what was the verse? He said, well, you know, I was reading, someone gave me a Bible in Christmas Island, and I was reading, it said that Jesus said that if a man looks at a woman with adultery in his heart, he has adulterated her. He's like, he's committed adultery with her. And he looked at me and said, that was it. I said, you sure? He said, that was it. He said, that was the most extraordinary thing. I'd never heard anything like that before. That was completely contrary to anything I've ever heard or ever learnt, that it would matter what you felt, what you thought about somebody else, you know. He actually couldn't put it all into words, but he said, as soon as I heard that sentence, that phrase, I knew I had to follow Jesus. So, okay. He said, I became a Christian on the strength of that verse. It changed his life. It's a different way of thinking, a different morality that he'd never heard of before. I was struck by something else about Jesus. Actually, this was a former Muslim who, you know, someone from a Muslim background, Salman Rushdie, he wrote a book, The Satanic Verses, and people tried to kill him, and they killed some of his publishers. There were children demonstrating on the streets of Sydney in the early 90s saying, kill Rushdie. You know, his life was in danger. And he spoke about how, in an article he wrote, he spoke about how when he was at Cambridge, he was taught that you could really disagree with somebody, but not mean it in an offensive way. You know, you could completely reject and dislike what someone was saying, but it didn't mean you have to punch them in the face. There's a difference between what people's beliefs and what they hold dear and what they're willing to argue for and the actual person. You can politely disagree. You don't have to fight someone just because they have a different belief from you. He said that was completely life-changing for him, and it was so important to him as a writer, that freedom to be able to criticize ideas without having to fight, you know. So different from the reaction of many to him. And as I was reading this, it reminded me of Jesus' words when he said, love your enemy, because really what Jesus would take is he'd take a moral principle and he'd kind of multiply it many times and make it almost unbearable in how strongly it was expressed. And I think when Jesus was saying, love your enemies, he was saying you can have the most profound disagreement with someone imaginable. They could actually be your enemy and be devoted to your destruction, but you should still love them. That's a remarkable teaching. A remarkable thing. And actually, I think that teaching has seeped into Christian culture and it's shaped our traditions of freedom of speech and our ability to debate things without having to kill each other. You know, there's a freedom in our society. And I think that's part of that. That's part of Jesus' inheritance. I think if Jesus hadn't been born, if he hadn't lived, if he hadn't taught, we wouldn't have that freedom. It wouldn't be there. Some people are influenced by Jesus in a very personal way, like my Iranian friend who found joy. He's the most passionate worshipper, I think, that I've ever met, that young man, after he heard that verse that Jesus had expressed about relationships. And others of us are influenced just through the culture, through our inheritance. We don't even know where half of the blessings of Jesus come from. But the most remarkable thing about Jesus for me is the freedom that he brings. The freedom that he brought and continues to bring in people's lives. I'm constantly surprised, overjoyed to see that freedom being worked out in people. I know there are some people who believe that basically the function of religion is to dominate and to control others. And any time there's an article in one of the major dailies, there's always a lot of people that will write comments on the web saying how, you know, if you believe your fairy tales about your imaginary God down in the garden shed, that's your problem. But religions are just all there to destroy and they should be gotten rid of, you know. There's a very strong view that many people have that religion's the source of all evil. It's actually not a very credible view. There's cultures without religion that have rejected religion have done a huge amount of harm in the last 100 years. But let's set that aside. My experience of people that have found Christ, that have found Jesus who never knew him, is that they didn't become enslaved. Quite the opposite happens. People become free. Jesus sets people free. That little baby was dynamite, really. He brought a message and a power and a reality that is absolutely transforming and riveting. As I said, I grew up with Jesus in my head, and, you know, the message of Jesus is part of the Christmas carols, it's part of our culture, it's sort of woven into so many things, and you can get so used to it, it just seems, you know, it's just normal. You know, you're not even confronted by how remarkable Jesus was, but he's absolutely extraordinary in what he taught and what he did, the influence that he continues to have on millions and millions of people's lives. And there's absolutely everything to give thanks for when we remember his birth. We don't actually know whether it was the 25th of December, but I wrote something about that in the bulletin if you want to read about where that date came from. But it doesn't really matter. What matters is that he came. He came among us and he showed us a way to God, a way to be set free from the deepest problems and burdens of the human soul. He showed us life and healing and grace abundantly. He came to bring life in its fullness, and that's a good reason to give thanks. That's actually the reason for the joy that runs through the carols, that runs through this season. That's where it comes from. You can turn it into tinsel, but it's not the same. It's not the same as the real joy that comes from Jesus Christ, that comes abundantly from his heart and from being in relationship with him, from knowing the freedom that his forgiveness brings, the power that his spirit brings in our lives. And that's why we're singing, that's why we have some passion to sing tonight, that Christ is born, Jesus is born. We're going to come to a time of lighting the candles, and Kate and Susie will assist. We're going to sing as well. I just encourage us all to stand.